Okay, good evening. Welcome to Tuesday night share by given by Rabbi Feldman. This week's share is sponsored by Raquel and Donnie Haupt in memory of Donnie's mother, Blima Fega Bas Avram.
Thank you so much. On the agenda for tonight, it really was originally on the agenda for last week, was to continue our discussion of 2 weeks ago, which was about the topic of Shemaic Onan. I'm not sure how many people in the room were there. The discussion, I've lost track a little bit of how that plays out. So I guess what we'll do is we'll quickly highlight the key points that we covered then, especially because I also don't remember exactly what I said then or what I didn't say then, and then I'd like to take it to a different stage of understanding the concept. So, in a sense, halfway. So, basically, the topic of Shemaic Onan, which we started 2 weeks ago, just to go over the key points that we started then, and then to move on. So we talked about the fact that the Gemara tells us in Mishnah Pesukah and Daf Lamed Ches that there is this notion that Shemaya is Ka'ona. We set aside the issue of why the Gemara uses the word Ona rather than Omer. Could have perhaps more easily seen that word used. But that issue aside, there's still a translation question. What exactly does this phrase mean, Shemaya Ka'ona? We know that in practice it means that I can fulfill mitzvahs of speech without actually talking, that I can fulfill Kiddush by listening to somebody else, I can fulfill Megillah by listening to somebody else. But how does that process work? And that question is one that traces back to the definitional issue. How do you translate the phrase Shomea Ka'onet? On the one hand, you could translate it as a reference to verbs, to actions, that Shomea, listening, is as if it is speaking. Listening and speaking have equal status. Or alternatively, you could translate it as referring to the individual. The Shomea is akin to the Ona. The one listening has the same status as the one speaking. And this is a very practical issue that has many ramifications of halacha. And it was debated throughout the generation. We mentioned last time that it was attributed, the debate was attributed to the Beis HaLevi versus the Chazon Ish. That's one battleground of the debate, and the Beis HaLevi was actually, it's unclear if he's really saying what he is alleged to be saying. But the Beis HaLevi had discussed the Mishnah in the Maseches Megillah, where the Mishnah says that the one who gets the Maftir, he has the schus of Mishias Kapayim Hundo Seas Kapayim, he gets the Duchen for the crowd. So why does that happen? Normally either you're not a Kohen and you don't get the Duchen at all, or you are a Kohen and all the Kohanim Duchen. So what is the idea of one person being singled out to Duchening mean? So the interpretation has been suggested by Shlomo Vilna, who the Beis Levi doesn't identify, that it means that Birchas Kohanim is done through Shomea Kohanim. That's the setting that the Mishnah is talking about. One Kohen is reciting Birchas Kohanim and the other Kohanim are listening. And the Beis Levi says it can't be. You can't use Shomea Kohanim for Birchas Kohanim because of the need for Birchas Kohanim to be done in a loud voice, the kol rom. So many understood the Beis HaLevi to be saying that Shemaya Ka'ona only works for issues of speech. It only works for the words themselves. It doesn't work for anything else, which has a certain logic to it because we know that it only works for mitzvos that are speech related. It doesn't work for lulav. It doesn't work for matzah. It doesn't work for actions like that. It only works for speech. So too, one could say that it only works for the speech part of a speech-oriented mitzvah. And if a mitzvah has something other than speech involved, Shemaya Ka'ona is not going to work for that. So therefore, if there's a condition like Kol Rom, so Shemaya Ka'ona is not going to be effective. And that's a very problematic opinion, because as much as it may make sense on a certain level, it's going to complicate certain mitzvahs tremendously, such as we mentioned, the Chazon Ish argues the point, it's going to complicate Kiddush and Megillah. Kiddush has to be recited over a full cup of wine, and we normally assume it's enough for the one reciting Kiddush to have the wine. We don't require everyone listening to have their own cup of wine. And if this this theory is right, then it seems that everyone should have to have their own wine, because the Shemaya makes it as if they are saying the words, but they're saying the words without wine. It's no good. And so too, when it comes to Kriyas Megillah, Kriyas Megillah has got to be read from a Kasher Megillah. So how can you sit in the audience and listen to the Megillah, so it's just you're saying every word? That's great. You don't have the Megillah in front of you. So for those types of issues, for those types of reasons, the Chazanish says the Beis Levi isn't correct. It's not the way I understand it. Rather, it's that you kind of hitch a ride together with the one speaking. So whatever is true about how he's doing it, is true about how you're doing it. So if he's doing it over a full cup of wine, so are you. If he's reading the Megillah from a Kasher Megillah, so are you. You don't have to have those details actually in place in your hand. Hi.
So that means that you're not...
Oh, sorry. Either one.
That means that you're not... The first thing you said, are you in the status would have been you'd need the coast with the wine. Like
you're going back to the definition issue?
Right.
So basically, if you say that...
Basically, you have the first definition that it's in that you're...
That's words.
Status.
Well, they both use... We both could be using the word status. Basically, the question is, does listening have the status of speaking? Not focusing on the word status, focusing on the action versus the individual. So if listening has a status of speaking, so okay, so you have the status of speaking, terrific, but you're not speaking with the proper circumstances. You're speaking without a cup of wine, you're speaking without a kasher and Megillah, so we'll call it as if you're speaking, terrific, but we need more than that. So in the midst of that needs more than that, you're going
to
have a problem. According to this read of Beis Levi, as I'll mention in a second, Beis Levi might actually mean something else. While if we say it's about the action, if we say that's the action, if we say it's about the speaker, so then we could say that the listener has the status of the speaker. So just as the speaker is performing the mitzvah with all of its parts, so too the listener joins in with the person, he hitches a ride with him, so he gets whatever that person is doing. Done. Well, drinking the wine for Kiddush is also a complicated consideration because it's not really part of the mitzvah. As in this machlokas rishonim, it's a different day, the day of mitzvahs. But even if you say that a mekadesh sarf shiyitam, also doesn't necessarily mean that it's part of the mitzvah. So it's a little bit of a complicating factor because, first off, we discussed recently in the past 2 weeks, there's no less than 15 different shittos as to what the mitzvah of Kiddush actually requires of you. But even if we say it requires tasting, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's separate from the whole process. So I would remove that detail because it's a little too complicated to look at. But for the most part, it sounds like from the Chazanish that whatever detail needs to be performed in the mitzvah is essentially speech, and you listen and join in, you get all the details, you know, whatever that would mean. Pashas, they would still have to do the hand information anyway, right? Although the language of Mishnah, if I'm not mistaken, the language of Mishnah is who knows say as kapo, what it means, he's the one who lifts his hand. So it's an interesting question how exactly that would play out, whether that's just a turn of the phrase, or whether we really mean that only he does it and the other ones don't, because one could say again that that does come along. But basically, that's hard to figure out, since again, it's not the practice that we see, although apparently in some society communities that has been the practice, and it seems to be that this is part of what's being debated here.
So
Shemek
Kohen
is cutting five from his Mishnah of Kohanim? No. Shemek Kohen is a explicit Sugya and elsewhere. But in this Mishnah about the Kohanim, somebody who happens to be Shlomo Mivilna wanted to suggest that the context of that Mishnah is that Brachas Kohanim was being done through Shemek Kohanim. And the Beis Levi said it can't be. That can't be the interpretation because it doesn't work for Brachas Kohanim. Which others agree with also. As we mentioned last time, the Netziv, who was the Koresh Yeshiva of the Lodgment of the Beis Levi, also has a tshuva in which he says that it doesn't work for Brachas Kohanim, but he doesn't get involved in this whole Lundus for a different reason. Hi, sorry.
First of all, the Megillah, then you would not have to have a permit in front of you to listen to the bill.
Right. So you either the extreme would be either like you do have to have a kosher Megillah or you don't have to have anything. Now, technically speaking, you don't have to have anything, but it's a big benefit to have for reasons of focus and concentration. And also, if you miss a word, because you can read 49% of the Megillah from a non-kosher Megillah. So, it's a big benefit.
Why cannot be also
with the Tefillah by
listening to what's up? Why can I? Why can I not?
Why can you not? Because a special takana, the Gemara says, only for somebody who's not capable. So we generally say somebody who is capable isn't included in this in takana. And there's a Yerushalmi that the Ran quotes in Rosh Hashanah that says tefillah is strong din as far as this is concerned. This is a little bit of a separate discussion. Maybe we'll get to it if we have time. We may have to have a third part. There's a lot to say about this topic. So in any event, so the so it's very possible that Beis Levi didn't mean this, because as many of those who may be in the best position to know, and members of the Soloveitchik family who descended from the Beis Levi, including the Rav in an essay printed in the Masorah, there's different versions of what they say, but they all suggest that Beis Levi never meant to say this whole Torah, he never meant to complicate our Kiddush or our Megillah reading. He just meant to say that when it comes to Duchening, there's this issue of communication, you have to actually connect. So that simply can't be done through some kind of mechanism, that's got to actually happen. But if it's just that there's an external condition, like holding a Kiddush cup or reading from a Kiddush from the Megillah, so that he doesn't necessarily think would be a problem. Or he can assume on behalf of the Beis Levi that he wouldn't necessarily argue with it. So this whole debate, which is attributed to the Beis Levi and the Chazon Ish, it's questionable whether or not the Beis Levi meant it. I think we also mentioned at the time that one could question the practice that many have to read the 10 sons of Haman themselves, not just to listen to that. And it's according to one tradition within that, it's based on an idea of the Ragachavar, that since you want to read those 10 names, the Neshima Achas in one breath, so that's an external condition that can't be done through Shemaic on it. So it's a little difficult to be machner on that and say that you can read from a printed Megillah. If you can read from a printed Megillah, then you're passing over the Hagenesh. So to say that you have to read the 10 sons yourself, like the Beis Levi, is a little bit of a mutually exclusive position to be taken. Yes.
The Gemara frequently refers to that the Yetzer Hara in former times, that the Ola used to be the Matri. It used to be that the Matri.
Correct, which is relevant to the next point we were about to make.
Sorry?
Which is relevant to the next example.
Okay,
so it's relevant to the other, because I said that the Beis Levi, it's questionable if he meant this, even though he's stuck with his position whether he meant it or not in later literature. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden says it fair. Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes this clearly in arguing on the Taz. It sounds like the position of Shulchan Aruch, if I'm not mistaken, is that a blind person can get an Aliyah. So Taz explains, how can a blind person get an Aliyah? As you're about to say, the original process of getting an Aliyah means a person who goes up to the Torah lane. So how does a blind person get a lane? So Taz says, you're right, in theory that would have been a problem if we were still on that system. Since we have the system nowadays where we have a professional Bal Korei who gets up there and reads, so great, now we're able to let the blind man have an Aliyah because he can fulfill his laning through listening to the Bal Korei, through Shemaya Kaone. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, no, it's not going to work, because Shemaya Kaone, and he's the one who says it explicitly, Shemaya Kaone only means you are saying the words that you're listening to. You're credited as if you're saying the words. The act of listening is like the act of speaking. So, fine. So this man who can't see gets an Aliyah. He's reciting all the words of Shlishi of Parsha Shmini, but he's not reading from a Sefer Torah. And that's a problem. So apparently the Taz believes, like the Chazon Ish, that you are joining in, you get the whole package. Whatever the person you're listening to is doing, it's as if you're doing it also. And the Rabbi Yaakov Emden is basically following this alleged Beis Levi view. And we mentioned there parenthetically also that one could question how could a blind person use Shemaya Kaone for laning when we have this principle called Kolaroi Lubila, which basically means that in order to fulfill a mitzvah b'diavet, to do a mitzvah in a less than ideal way, it has to at least be possible for you to do it in an ideal way. So if you can possibly do it in the ideal way, then we'll let you do it in the less ideal way. But if you can't even possibly do it in the ideal way, then that becomes a real problem. So if this man cannot see the Sefer Torah, one could raise the question of whether or not Shemaya Kaone is a valid avenue, and that affects the next issue. The next issue that we mentioned was that of the debate between Rashi and Tosfos concerning somebody who is behind in Shmoneh Esrei. Somebody in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, and the Tzibur is ahead. They're up to Kaddish and Kedusha. Kaddish or Kedusha. So what do you do about answering Kaddish or Kedusha? So we know you can't answer in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. You can't interrupt in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. So is there an Eitzah? So Rashi says, yeah, there's a great Eitzah. You can have all your things in once. You can have your cake and eat it too. What you'll do is you'll pause and you'll listen. So you'll be Yotzei through Shemei Ta'oneh. But you won't be Masik because you won't be talking. So it's great. You can both answer Kedusha and still not be Masik. And Tosfos says that's a horrible plan. Because if Shemei is Ka'oneh for them, you're talking. That's the whole point. You're trying not to talk, and meanwhile you're doing this trick which makes you like you're talking. So that's not going to be a good idea at all. So, Chayyim, this is the same issue on a different type of point, but it's basically the same issue. That Tosfos seems to understand, like the alleged Beis Halevi and the Rebbe of Emden, that Shemei Ka'oneh means it's as if you're actually saying the words you're listening to. So here, this comes out to be a different type of chumrah. Not that you can't just have the external factors, but that it has a status like talking. So if you're talking, so you can't talk during Shmoneh Esrei. While Rashi is apparently following the Chazon Ish and Taz, that it's not that you're considered to be talking, but that you're considered to be like the talker. You have the status of the talker, that just as he is Yotzei, you are Yotzei, but there's nothing that means you're talking. So therefore you can be Yotzei the mitzvah without a hefsek. And we discussed parenthetically there the cute idea of the Magid and Mizrich, who connected this to the idea that Gemara has, that when it comes to a machshava tova, somebody has a good plan to do a mitzvah, so we credit your machshava as if it's an action. And when it comes to an avera, if you're trying to do something bad, so we don't hold your machshava against you. So too here, you're able to use your machshava, so to speak, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of answering Kaddish. That's Rashi's view. That's how we explain Rashi, defend Rashi against Tosfos. But for the Aveira, for the Hefzik, machshava doesn't work, which is not our normal understanding of that whole Gemara, but it's a cute idea. So we mentioned there's also a third view on this point, besides Rashi and Tosfos, one that argues on both of them and says Rashi's wrong because his plan doesn't work, and Tosfos doesn't have to be worried because the plan doesn't work, because you can't be Yotzei Shemei Ka'oneh for the same reason we mentioned a minute ago, the idea that you have to at least have the ideal way possible. So here you can't talk right now, you're halachically prohibited from talking, which means you can't do it the normal way, so we can't let you rely on it the bedieved way either. And the Shagash Aryeh took issue with that whole assumption, because the Shagash Aryeh says that's not the way to understand Shemei Ka'oneh. Shemei Ka'oneh is not some b'di'evet structure where ideally you should be talking, but b'di'evet we let you do it this way. It's a normal way to do it. It's a normally acceptable way. You know, it's the way 99.5% of us fulfill Megillah Purim. It's not a b'di'evet. It's a fine way to do things. And therefore this whole rule of Kalaroi Labila, this rule that you have to be able, at least in theory, to do the ideal way, doesn't apply. So you don't have to worry about the blind man getting an aliyah. You don't have to worry about somebody in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei answering Kedusha. And you don't have to worry about his issue. His issue is whether a person who is mute can be Yotzei Kriyat Shema through listening to somebody else. So he could have raised that issue there also. So he says, no, the whole rule doesn't apply. Now the question of Kriyat Shema and Shemei Ka'oneh, I don't remember if we touched upon it 2 weeks ago or not. So maybe that's it's a separate point, and we'll come back to that. Well, that may be maybe a third part. So in any event, so these different issues, in the case of Levi, the Chazon Ish, the Rebbe of Emden, the Taz, the Tosfos, and the Rashi, all seem to be circling around the same question. Basically, does Shemei Ka'oneh only credit me with the words, and therefore make it be like I'm actually talking? Or does Shemei Ka'oneh give me the whole package, because it's not about talking, it's about joining me to speak? This has many, many nafkaminas. I won't mention too many of them now, just touch upon a few. Paul's going to talk about, there's a Meiri in Brachos that talks about if somebody ate and is being Yotzei benching through Shemei Ka'oneh, and he is now walking away while he's listening, so he's no longer sitting at the place where he ate, but the person who's benching is. Is that good enough? Standing for Chazar Sashatz, the Mishnah Berurah suggests is because you're trying to be Yotzei something on some level of Shemei Ka'oneh, so therefore you should be in the proper position when doing it. Question of we have to have clean hands to daven. What if you're davening for Shemaya Kaona that Prima Gadam talks about? A number of other issues like this that all seem to be affected by this. In addition to Kriya Shema and Shemaya Omer, which have their own special issues, and perhaps Haggadah, which also has its own special issues. So maybe, yeah, maybe that'll be a separate part. Maybe we'll discuss that closer to Pesach. What I would like to focus on now, and it's just to add one point that we also mentioned before, mentioned the Rambam mentions these two possibilities together in his Mishnah Torah, because the Rambam says that if somebody listens to a bracha, so he is Yotzei, and if he says Amen, Harehu Kamavara, then it's as if he's making the bracha himself. So you see both levels within the formulation of Rambam, that straight Shemei Kona without Amen, Amen is not necessary for Shemei Kona, even though he always teach that you want to be Yotzei Abracha, you should say Amen, but strictly speaking, that's not really from the halachas of Shemei Kona. So if one just listens to a bracha, that's Shemei Kona, and that is Yotzei, you fulfill the mitzvah that way, and if one says Amen, Amen has ditto power, Amen repeats what was said before it, so then it's Namish Harehu Kamavara, then you're credited as if you said the whole thing. So, sure.
But if you said Amen, what did you accomplish?
If you did say Amen?
If you did not say
Amen, you could still fulfill Shemei Kaona that way.
So
you could be Yotze. So in the Rambam's formulation, it may be a little bit of a... So that's a good question. It may relate to some of what we're talking about. You know, some of the nafkaminas that we mentioned and some more that we will mention perhaps might be affected by this. But basically the question is, are you using Shemei Kaona to be Yotze, which is basically just on to listening? Or if you say Amen, maybe it's not even Shemei Kaona. That's simply saying the bracha. Amen has the whole meaning of what was said before it, so therefore that should be enough. And the differences might be the basic differences we've been discussing between the two paths. So what I'd like to do now, I think, is to keep us organized. So these, some of the other nafkaminas and some of the special cases, maybe let's leave that for a different discussion. What I'd like to look at right now is these two possibilities, our two themes that we've been talking about here. It's a Levi, Dakavendin, Rashi versus Chazanish, Taz, Tosus. It could reflect which broader principles or which alternative principles are being brought in to explain Shemaya Kaona. So for example, one could say that Shemaya Kaona is related to another idea that we have, the Gemara tells us, which is that of Hihor Kedibur. The Gemara discusses in Sachas Brachos in the third parak a principle that thought could have the status of speech. The Gemara talks about somebody who is tamei, somebody who's not able to recite a bracha under the normal circumstances, and could they perhaps fulfill the obligation of bracha without actually saying it out loud, but merely by mentally reciting the bracha. So this idea of Hira Kedibor could, at least in some understanding, basically be identical with Shomer Kaona. Maybe it works that that's how it happens, that if I'm listening to the bracha, so then by definition I'm being Maharhir of the bracha, so that should work, that should make me be Yotzei that way. So that's a discussion some of the Sfarim have. Is there the Eger about this? Is there Tari Evan about this? They raise the question that it's interesting, the Gemara has a discussion in that same Gemara over there in Brachos and Daf Chaf. The Gemara raises the question of why is it, or what is the story as far as a woman and her obligation in Brachos HaMazon. It's actually an unresolved point. The Gemara has this question, it's a very major issue, which it's not really clear how we paskin. We assume Brachos HaMazon is the mitzvah in HaTorah, and the Gemara is not sure whether women are mechuyavos in benching and a level in HaTorah. We assume they're at least Chayav Midrabanan, but whether or not they share the field on a level of the Torah is actually an open question. So the Gemara asks, a surprising question also, the Gemara asks, well, who cares? What difference does it make? And the Sfarim talk about why they ask that question. I mean, it should affect Hilchos Tekus, for example. Like we assume that if a man is not sure if he benched, so he has to bench again, even though normally we say Safek Brachos Lahakel, but when it comes to benching, we say benching is a Din D'Oraisa, so we say Safek Lahachmer. So does that halacha apply to women or not? It's a very important practical question. So why the Gemara doesn't quote that as a nafka mina? So the Sfarim talk about that. It's an interesting thing that the Gemara seems to ask, well, who cares? What difference does it make? And since women are going to bench anyway, because they're chayav rabbanim, so the Gemara throws out this question, and what difference does it make? So the answer the Gemara gives is not this answer that shakes, but rather the question is, to be motzi your husband. And this is the answer given by Ravina, that let's say her husband wants the Yotze benching through Shemei Kona, and they both ate together, so let's have his wife bench for him. So, does that work? So that's what the Gemara posits on this issue, that since the husband is presumably chayav ben HaTorah, assuming he ate enough, and his wife's only possibly chayav the Rabbanan, so maybe that would interfere with his being motzi, with her being motzi him. So the Achronim asked, but if you follow, Ravina is the one saying this. Ravina, earlier on that daf, is also a proponent of Hirur Kedibur. So what's the problem? Let the husband listen, and he'll, by definition, be Mahar the words. He'll be thinking about the words that he's listening to. And that should be enough. So who cares whether she's Chayav or not? In other words, this could call into question the whole necessity for somebody being mostly someone else, this whole requirement that we have that they're Chayav. So one could say, well, what difference does it make? Let them not be chayiv at all. You know, let it be a tape recorder. It doesn't matter. Let it be my Palm Pilot sound generator. It's going to be the same thing, because when you hear the words, you'll be thinking of them. When you're thinking of them, hear Kedibur, that should work. So there is a certain trend that understands hear Kedibur as basically being, so to speak, the active ingredient in Ishel Me'ah Ka'onah, and that's basically what happens. So then you have some questions, so then why is that even an issue? So there are Achronim who explain differently, that really here Kedibur and Shemer Ka'ona are two separate tracks, and it only works when you want to be using that track. So if you're trying to Yotze through Shemer Ka'ona, so here Kedibur doesn't work. So basically, if you want to be Mahar the words, okay, you can do that. You can do that without listening to your wife. You can do that on your own. But if you're trying to be Yotze through Shemer Ka'ona, so then here Kedibur doesn't work, which really argues against using this as the active ingredient, and argues basically that it's got to be a different mahal, which is also, as some Sfarim point out, also perhaps suggested by the fact that Hirur Kedibur is a debated principle. It's not necessarily the case that everyone in the Gemara agrees with Hirur Kedibur. And when it comes to Shemei Ka'ona, we generally have the impression that Shemei Ka'ona is universally accepted. You don't have any opinion that we're aware of that rejects the notion of Shemei Ka'ona. So it's hard to trace Shemei Ka'ona back to Hirur Kedibur when Shemei Ka'ona is far more unanimously accepted than Hirur Kedibur is. But if we were to take this approach, that Hirur Kedibur is basically what Shemei Ka'ona is, so then that would work well with Beis Halevi, Rebecca Bemden, Rashi, that basically Hirur counts like speech, Shamea leads to hearer, and hearer is like speech. So basically, you're listening, it's as if you're speaking. Has the status of speaking. It only works for words. And it's like speaking out loud, it has the risk of a hesek. So basically, that would seem to parallel nicely that whole camp could work from a hearer to Dibur perspective. Okay?
According to that,
so that's where the kasha comes from, because halacha l'maisha, even though Rishonim did argue this principle, but halacha l'maisha we generally assume that is the case. So either that's a kasha or an indication that, you know, another indication to move away from this theory. So the ones who would hold on to this theory would have to explain that. So now I don't know how much latitude there is for someone to maintain that it's not a requirement. So again, there are Rishonim who express views differently than the way we generally assume it to be. So, you know, you could have a couple of pockets in which you could hide it. Either you could maybe argue on this, or you could say that it's a kasha for the answer, or you could say it's an indication that maybe that's not the way to go. So if that's not the way to go, so what would be the way to go? So another approach you could have is that basically this is a type of shlichus, that this is a type of agency. That the same way we have a principle of shlucho shel adam kamoso, that I sometimes have the ability to be mamana as somebody else, to appoint somebody else to do a mitzvah for me. So perhaps that's what's going on here also, that I have an obligation to read the Megillah, so I can appoint somebody else to do it for me. I have an obligation to recite Kiddush, I can have somebody else do it on my behalf. Now it's hard to say that it matches Shlichus exactly, for any number of reasons, one of which is that normally, if I am using Shlichus, so I don't even have to be there. I could have my Shliach, you know, one relevant example is that Bedikas Chametz coming up, and I could have my Shliach do Bedikas Chametz for me, and I don't even have to be in the country. And I could have somebody else do it for me. I could have somebody else do it for me and not even be there. So then if really Kriyas and Megillah would work through Shlichus, or Kiddush would work through Shlichus, so let me take a nap Friday night and not come down till later, and I'll have my Shliach make Kiddush for me. Or let me stay home on Purim night to go out to some party and have somebody else read Megillah for me. So that does suggest the Shlichus model is not perfect. It's interesting, the Kajigal of Arav has a discussion about this in his Shiach HaSad. The Kajigal of Arav, as we've mentioned in the past, is a great student of the Avi Nezer, of the Sachet of Rebbe. And nowadays, Svarim that he wrote are printed in a three-volume set. So the first two volumes are his Tshuvos, called Tshuvos Eretz Tzvi, and the third volume is called Shiach HaSad, where he talks about different Klalim blood principles and Tefillah related things and general blood principles. So he has a discussion about Shemaiah Kona issues over there in Shiach HaSada. And as is kind of symbolic of his general Darach Halima, the Avinezer's tradition, is there's a lot of comparing different models. So he tends to a more literal reading of the Shlichus idea of comparing Shemaiah Kona with Shlichus directly. And he addresses this question of why do you have to be in the room then if you're using Shlichus. He basically breaks things down into two parts. And he says that basically if you have a mitzvah that's made up of speech, so really there are two components. There is the component that you have to say the words, and you also have to hear the words, which in some cases we find explicitly stated. When it comes to Kriya Shema, for example, we find, you know, the requirement that you have to hear the words that you're saying. So even though every mitzvah could be different in this regard as far as sources are concerned, basically that's the way he understands it. There really there are two halves. You have to say it, then you have to hear it. So the saying it, that you can have somebody else do. But you still have to be there to hear it. Hearing it is something automatic. It's not something that gives itself over to Shlichus. It's a mitzvah of the gufa, the mitzvah you do with your body. So therefore, the hearing you'll have to do yourself. You'll have to be in the room to do the hearing. But the speaking part, that you can have somebody else do for you. That's how we generally assume, although we allow it to be somewhat broad. You know, we say, you shouldn't need it. Right, again, so then the same, I'll go back to the same pockets from before, because I think they're the same idea. But, and as we'll discuss in a moment, that's also one of the kashas that's raised on this explicitly, we'll get to in a second. But that's what we generally assume, that there is a need for a kavanah. Oh, no, it can be broad. We say that the Shiach Shibra and Rosh Hashanah doesn't have to know that there are 843 people in the room and who they are. He has kavanah for the room as a whole, and whoever might be there, whoever might sneak in after we start. A general type of kavanah, but there is a need for that. So this Shlichus model, so the Kajik Lover, for one, takes a very literal view of it, and then he could even explain the issue of why you have to be in the room, because we're splitting it in half. And then working from there, he basically explains certain dinim in Shemaiah Kona through the model of Shlichus, taking it as a very close model. So just to give three examples that he has there. So there is a machlokus rishonim, and this is also one of the questions that's raised against the hear her kedibra model, that there are rishonim, there's some who argue on this, but there are some rishonim who believe that Shemaiah Kona only works for a full bracha. You can't be yosei a bracha half through Shemaiah Kona and half through yourself. It's got to be a full entity, even though it's quite not how we relate to Megillah. Maybe Megillah has a different structure, but let's say a bracha. You want to be yosei a bracha through Shemaiah Kona, it's all or nothing. There are other Rishonim who argue on this, but the Rishonim who maintain that view. So, says the Kaddish Glover, that that parallels Rishonim in the Sefer Gittin, the Ran, and other Rishonim, if I'm not mistaken, in Gittin, who believe that ain't shlichus l'chatzi davar. You do a mitzvah or an action, and I don't, shlichus doesn't only apply by mitzvah, it applies by certain actions also, certain chaos, certain realities. So that either the whole thing is done through shlichus, or it's all done by yourself. But there's no half measures. So says the Kaddish Glover, it's the same model, that basically shlichus has got to be all or nothing, and so too, shemei ka'ona has got to be all or nothing. Another example he uses is, we mentioned that there is a view of Tosfos, we mentioned this last time, that basically, I don't think this is accepted of the halacha, it's not our mainstream approach, and it's against the Shagash Ayah that we mentioned earlier tonight, but Tosfos is of the view that shemei ka'ona is not l'chachila, that really l'chachila you will be yotzei mitzvah directly, and using Shemei Ka'ona is a little bit less l'chachila. It's not the most mechudar way to do things. So it says the Kaddish Glover, yeah, mitzvah bo yosin v'shlicho. Then when it comes to shlichus also, we prefer you do a mitzvah yourself rather than use a shliach. So too, when it comes to Shemei Ka'ona, it's the same principle, because again, it's following the shlichus model. And the third example he gives, this is somewhat similar to the Magen Mizrich that we mentioned before, the question of Rashi, that Rashi has suggested that you can be Yotze answering Kaddish Kedusha during Shmon Esrei with Shemei Ka'oneh, and Tosfos says, aye, it's a hefzik. So says the Kaddish Glover, no, it's not a hefzik. Ain't shliach l'dvar avera. If you send a shliach, to do something wrong, that doesn't trace back to you, but you can use a shliach for a mitzvah. So great, so a shliach is there to make you Yotze Kaddish Kedusha, but he's not effective for the Avera because he ain't shliach l'dvar Avera, which if you think it through, you could have a lot of questions on. But that's, it's again, an interesting, it's pretty symbolic of the Kaddish Glover Derech, of this whole comparing one din to another. So that's an interesting way of taking it. So that's consistent with his whole approach, that basically Shemei Ka'ona is shlichus, not really with any problems. You can work out all the problems. Basically it is shlichus directly. And perhaps maybe the most common way to say things, and this is, Chazon Ish has a phrasing like this, and a while later Achronim say it like this, is just simply put, that it's a hitzdarfus ke'ein shlichus, that it's a partnership deal that is similar to shlichus, not exactly like shlichus, that's why we'll have some differences, like having to be in the room, etc., etc., but it has many of the trappings of shlichus, while still being its own model. So therefore, that again, both of these two, the Mama Shlichus or the Kain Shlichus, this is consistent with the view of the Chazon Ish and the view of the Taz and the view of Rashi, that it's not that it's as if I'm speaking, and that it's only word for words, but that I have the right to join in your mitzvah, that I have the right to connect with you, and however you're doing the mitzvah, that all traces back to me. And that would explain some of the dinim which don't work so well with the Hir Hur Tidibur model, such as the need for kavana, the need to have intent, the need for the person to be a bar chiyuva, because if the person is not chayiv, so then this model explains it very well. I need the person to be chayiv like me, because if I'm joining him, I got to be doing things on the same level. So if it turns out he's not as chayiv as I am, so I can't get a ride with him, he's not going to the same place, to take the muscle a little further. And so I need somebody who's taking the car all the way to where I'm going in order to take a ride with him, so I need to go all the way to the level of the ice or level whatever it is, so then I can only get a ride with somebody who's going to the same place. But if we take a Hir Hur Tidibur model, as you pointed out, it doesn't seem to be so clear why you should need that need. So such requirements, such as the person being a Bar Chiyuva, and the need for kavana, and also the need, there are some who suggest, and this is a very complicating point in the halacha, and it's questionable whether this is true or not, but there are some who say that in order to be Yotze Shemei Ka'ona, you need to have havana as well. You need to understand what's being said, which is not always the case, as we know sometimes you'll hear it, see us, and you won't know what's going on. And that's more chumer than speaking itself. And when you're speaking itself, you can be Yotze the brachos without necessarily understanding every word, and then you'll say, but when it comes to Shemei Ka'ona, then you have to understand every word. So that apparently is a way of creating this connection, even without actually speaking. So that's really this third model, which maybe will hold up as the most shyest as far as working for the most parts, and perhaps having the most the largest number of proponents, and perhaps that's how Shemei Kohanim works. Basically, like this Histarfus Kain Shlichus, this way of creating a partnership following some of the trappings of Shlichus without necessarily having the model completely. Okay, so I think basically we'll do a little recap that last point, then we'll stop there for today. And so we'll leave for a separate discussion some of the possible exceptions, again, just three that come to mind. Kriya Shema, Sfira Shomer, and Haggadah all merit their own discussions. Maybe that'll be a Pesach-oriented discussion. And in addition, many of the other examples of where this whole debate could make a difference. So just, we won't review the whole first part again because that was itself a review, but just to review what we added. So this question of whether Shemei Kohanim functions like saying the words on the words only, but actually like saying them, or whether it functions like joining in with the person who's speaking and getting everything that they're doing, seems to parallel the question of what other mechanism is Shemei Kohanim utilizing. That there were those who felt it was working off of a track of Hira Kedibur. If that's true, it would work well for Tosfos and Beis Halevi and the Vak of Emden, that basically it's like they're saying the words, but it raises a number of questions. It raises the question of why do we need a Bar Chiyuva, which, as the Gachorim pointed out, was a Kasha on Ravina, because Ravina says Hira Kedibur works, but also that if a woman is Chayav and benching only Rabbanan, she can't be mostly a man who's Chayav Daraisa. And we discussed how some Achronim say it's because they're Davka two separate processes, and if you're using one, the other one doesn't work. They don't work at the same time. And then we also mentioned the point that Shemei Kohanim is universally accepted and Hira Kedibur is not. Makes it difficult to assume that they're connected. And some of the requirements of Shemei Kohanim, such as Bar Chiyuva, such as Havana, and all of that, and such as Kavana, are less understandable in the context of Hira Kedibur. Then we mentioned the possible model of Shlichus, how Shlichus could be what's going on here, even though you have to be in a room, but normally Shlichus don't have to be in a room. So we discussed the Kazakh Lover's version of this philosophy where it comes to literally be Shlichus, where he explains that there are two halves, the speaking and the listening. The listening you got to do yourself, that's why you got to be there, but the speaking you can do through Shlichus. And how that could explain certain possible benefits, and each one of them is disputed, each one of them is debated, but different possibilities, such as whether Shemei Kohanim can work for a Chatzi Bracha, possibly being explained by Ein Shlichus L'Chatzi Davar. Tosfos's idea that you have to, there's preferables, a Hiddur to make a Bracha yourself, being explained by Mitzvah B'Yosef and Mishlucho. And Rashi's position that you can be Yotze answering Kaddish and Kedusha with Shemei Kohanim, but still not be Masik, being explained by Ein Shlichus L'Zara Veir. And then we mentioned that others took a less literal view, even using the Shlichus process as a help, and basically said it was a histarfus ke'ein shlichus, type of partnership that has trappings of shlichus without actually being shlichus. That's why there are differences such as having to be there, but that also explains why there are certain needs for connection, such as the possible idea of having to have the whole bracha, the idea of having to have kavana, the idea of having to be listening to a bar chiyuva is very logical based on that, because basically you are partnering with this person, so you had to be on the same level. And also, if you impose him that you have to have Havana, which is a greater requirement than making the bracha yourself, is also possibly explained by that principle. Okay, so again, so there are elements. There are several full-volume works on Shemei Kohanim. The fact is, taking us now more than two discussions wouldn't be so surprising. Okay, so I wish you a... It's unclear. It's a little bit of a debated point. For what purposes? The purposes of making brachos. And the Gemara recommends it for somebody who's tame. Practically speaking, you have to look how far and bring him.
Also,
I have a
question. When you said it, understanding the words, so is that a majority opinion? Is that how... that you have to, that if you're in the audience for Kiddush, that a person would have to understand the entire Kiddush in their language, in their native tongue, so that may, is that how would it hold halacha? Is that how it would be halacha?
I don't think we necessarily all pass like that. Definitely yesh on me lismach, that you can even have who to rely on, not to assume like that. I wouldn't say that people are not yotze if they don't understand everything. I certainly always recommend that one to try to understand As it comes to Megillah Esther, the Gemara itself points out that there are certain words that Chashtana ben Haramach, we don't even know what that means. No one knows what that means. There are certain words which nobody knows how to translate. But as much as you can, it certainly always could die. I mean, again, this is a matter of machlokus among the poskim, and we didn't necessarily assume Lahachman in that question, but the whole premise seems to point us in that kind of a direction. Okay, go ahead.